This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Before Johnny Cash died last September, he and his record producer Rick Rubin had chosen the recordings for a 5-CD box set called Unearthed. It was posthumously released late last year. We're going to listen to and talk about some of the music with producer Rick Rubin. Cash and Rubin seemed like an unlikely pair when they started working together in 1993. Cash, the aging country music star, and Rubin, a producer best known for his work with hip-hop and heavy metal bands. But many people consider their first collaboration, the 1994 CD American Recordings, to be Cash's finest work. It featured Cash alone with his guitar, playing some of his favorite songs. For the albums they made together, Rubin not only encouraged Cash to record his favorite songs, he convinced Cash to record songs that might have seemed out of character for him, including music by Neil Young, Depeche Mode, and Nine Inch Nails. This helped introduce Cash to younger listeners. Four of the 5 CDs in the new box set feature previously unreleased tracks from the Cash-Rubin collaboration. The fifth is a best-of collection drawn from the albums they made together. Rick Rubin, welcome to Fresh Air. Before we play something from the CD, just tell us a little bit about how you and Johnny Cash, because I know he was alive when the idea for this box set was formed, how you both decided that you wanted to do this box of unreleased recordings.
Well, over the last 10 years, we had recorded so many songs, only a few of which came out on album, that just in looking through the material, we decided there's so much great stuff, it really deserved to be heard. And we started listening to it and picking songs we liked, and it just seemed like, it really seemed like a way to clear the decks more for the future, because we were planning on making a lot more albums together.
So he was in on the selection of the songs on this?
Yes, he was.
Well, let's start with something from the CD. There's 5 CDs. Let's start with something from the first CD. And this is a song called If I Give My Soul. It's a song written by Billy Joe Shaver. Is this a song that Johnny Cash selected to record?
Yes, it was.
Why did he want to choose it?
He said Billy Joe Shaver was one of his favorite songwriters, and he just felt that the lyrics suited him, and he felt a connection with the song.
Did you connect with the song?
I liked it quite a bit.
I like it too, which I guess is why I'm choosing it. It's a great song about a broken man bargaining with God for the most important things a mortal needs and wants. This recording starts with Johnny Cash saying, "Get off the stage, Cash." What's that about?
The recording was made at a time when Johnny was still touring, and he came to the session just from being on tour. And the headspace and performance aspect of presenting a song to a large audience is very different than getting an intimate personal recording. And he had sung the song once before, the one that's on the box, and it felt like it was being performed for an audience, and it felt a little disconnected. So I requested him to... I said that to him, that it sounded like he was singing to an audience and not making it personal. And he said to himself, "Get off stage, Cash," and then did the version that we hear.
Well, let's hear it. This is Johnny Cash, If I Give My Soul, a song by Billy Joe Shaver.
Get off stage, Cash.
Exactly.
Okay. Down a dangerous road I have come to where I'm standing with a heavy heart and my hat clutched in my hand. Such a foolish man. God ain't known no greater sinner. I have come in search of Jesus, hoping he will understand. If I give my soul, will he clean these clothes I'm wearing? If I give my soul, will he put new boots on my feet? If I bow my head and beg God for his forgiveness, will he breathe new life within me and bring her back to me? I had a woman.
That's If I Give My Soul from the new Johnny Cash box set, Unearthed. My guest is Rick Rubin, who produced the last series of Johnny Cash's recordings, the American Recording Series. And together, Cash and Rubin put together this new box set of sessions that were unreleased from that series of recordings. Rick Rubin, what did Johnny Cash's music mean to you before you met him?
Well, I don't know if it was so much his music per se that drew me to him. It was more his overall persona. And obviously, I love his music, but his attraction was greater than music. There's just something about him. It's hard to explain.
What did you think of that persona as being?
Rebellious. Honest, divided.
How divided?
Well, there was clearly a side of him that was spiritual and religious, and there was another side that was dark and drug using, and he really lived an extreme life in different directions.
I'll add another division to that, which is like stoic but really sensitive.
True. That's true.
So how did you end up meeting him?
I went to see him perform. I believe it was somewhere in Orange County. And we met after the show. And the show was fantastic. It was the first time I'd ever seen him perform live. And we met backstage after the show and just talked about music.
Did you meet him with the idea of proposing a series of recordings to him?
I met him with the idea of potentially working together, but I didn't know where it was going to go, and I didn't have any expectation of what it could or should be. It just it felt like the idea of connecting was a good one.
And can you talk a little bit about how that evolved into the American Recording Series?
Well, we didn't have a plan, really, and that's normally the case with the albums I make. We try to really find what it's supposed to be through experimentation. And with Johnny, we did that. We tried a lot of different things before we settled on what that first album was. And some of those experiments on the way are on the box set. Playing with different bands, playing in different styles, and just trying to find what the sound for the new Johnny Cash would be that resonated with who he was and who he always was, and sounded both revolutionary and new and natural, and like that's the way it was always supposed to be. So it was really a journey that we went on to find what that sound was.
What was the process like of going through songs and figuring out what he should record?
He would send me songs that he liked, and I would send him songs that I liked, and we would compare notes and discuss them and talk about why we liked them. And sometimes I would send him, you know, a CD with 3 songs. Sometimes I'd send him 30 songs. And he would always call and say, well, I like this, I don't like this, I love this, I can't wait to record this, I don't really understand this. Sometimes he'd ask, what is it about this one that you like? And we'd talk them through. And ultimately, he would pick the ones that just resonated with him. And there were cases where I would, if there were ones that I felt strongly about, I might make a stronger case, although that rarely happened. Hurt was one of those songs where I think if I would have just sent that song to him in the context of a CD of 30 songs, I don't know that he would have picked it. But when I did send it to him, I think I explained that I really thought that that one had the potential to be really, really special.
With Hurt, it's in a way, you know, it's a song about somebody who's a cutter, you know, who cuts themselves. It's the kind of cutting where, maybe pain's better than feeling nothing. And it is a kind of teenage phenomenon. What did Johnny Cash feel, at his age and with all that he's gone through in his life, feeling a song that has such a kind of teenage point of view about pain?
It's interesting that you say that, because most people who hear the song assume that he wrote it when they hear him singing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, uh, I don't I don't think that he saw it as a teenage point of view. I think he saw it as a drug song, and ultimately an anti-drug song, because it was so... There was such despair in it. But he took the needle remark to be a drug reference.
Well, why don't we play the Nine Inch Nails version and the Johnny Cash version back to back?
Okay.
And this is Hurt.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain. The only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole. The unfamiliar sting. Try to kill it all away. But I remember everything. I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt.
That's Johnny Cash's version of Hurt. And my guest is Rick Rubin. He produced the final series of Johnny Cash's recordings, the American recording series. And now he's produced a box set of Johnny Cash's records. And four of the five CDs in the box feature previously unreleased songs. The fifth CD is highlights of the released records. When you started to produce your sessions with Johnny Cash, did you go back and listen to his records so that you could figure out what you wanted to do differently, some of the production style that you wanted to change, some of the things you didn't want?
No. We really were starting at ground zero, and I didn't want it to relate or not to relate to the past. And again, we didn't go in with any preconceived ideas of what it was supposed to be or not supposed to be. It really was a finding these beautiful moments and seeing where it went.
Now, some of the takes that you've released over the years are recordings that he actually made in your living room. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Not even in your recording studio, but in your living room.
That's correct. The whole first album was recorded in the living room of my house.
And why did when you were recording in the living room, did you do it with the idea that this would be the final takes? This would be what you would release?
Originally not. Originally, they were demos, and then as we were recording in studios and in different places and trying different things, when we listened to all the different things we tried, the living room tapes were kind of the most exciting to both of us, so we continued recording in the living room.
Why do you think that was so? Why do you think the living room tapes were the most exciting?
I think it's because Johnny had made so many albums in the recording studio that it reframed the experience of recording, and it really was just he and I sitting on a couch and him playing me songs. And it had a more personal and intimate and internal feeling about it. It wasn't... I spoke earlier about the performance aspect of playing in front of people. And I suppose being in a recording studio has those same kind of... there's a certain expectation of getting on the mic in a recording studio that there's some kind of permanence about it. Where singing songs in the living room is, it's really casual. So I think the catching the casual, his real, true, casual personality was something that we were able to do better in the living room environment than in a studio environment. And then as time went on, I put a studio in my house, which has very much of a living room environment.
Now, you have two versions of one song on this new box set. I'm a Drifter. It's a Dolly Parton song. Mm-hmm. And the arrangement and the musicians are different on each of these versions. Can you talk about the two different versions?
Yes, that was a song that was of all the songs, when I started looking for songs for Johnny before the first record, that was the very first song that I found that I was excited about for him to record. And we recorded it many times. We recorded it acoustically by himself in the living room. We recorded it in the studio with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. We recorded it in the studio with, I think on the second version it's Flea playing bass, mm-hmm. and I can't remember all the musicians now, but with different groups of people, and they're very different from each other, and it never got to the point where I felt like we captured the magic transcendent version of the song that fit on our studio album. But I thought in the context of the box set, it was interesting to kind of see our experimentation process. And I think both of them are very good and respectable versions, but it gave some insight into the creative process and what we were trying to do and how we were going about it. By I think you get that from hearing these two versions of this song.
Yeah, and before we hear them, what is it about this song that made you so committed to including it?
I don't know. I just felt a connection to it. And I'd heard the Dolly Parton version, and I felt like it was a great song, mm-hmm. but there was a kind of a depth and power in the lyrics that the music didn't support so much. The Dolly Parton version felt lighter to me, and lyrically it felt more serious, and the goal was to kind of find that serious mood that the song seemed to really be about.
Well, let's hear both of these versions of I'm a Drifter back to back. Both of these are on the new Johnny Cash box set, Unearthed. So the first version is, first we'll play the version with Flea on bass, and then we'll play the version with, it's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
I'm a drifter, lonesome drifter. Got no place to call my own no more. I'm a wanderer, lonesome wanderer. Got no one to call my own no more. Got no strings to tie me down. Got no cause to hang around. What difference does it make which way I go? Got an empty feeling deep inside. Still I need to stay alive. And who can tell what waits beyond this road? I'm a drifter, a lonesome drifter. Got no one to call my own no more. Got no strings to tie me down. Got no cause to hang around. What difference does it make which way I go?
Before we continue our conversation with Reuben, let's listen back to a short excerpt of the interview I recorded with Cash in 1997, just a few days before he made his illness public. This is the part of the interview in which he talked about working with Reuben. I had asked how Reuben first approached him.
Well, my contract with Mercury Polygram Nashville was about to expire, and I never had really been happy. The company, the record company, just didn't put any promotion behind me. I think one album, maybe the last one I did, they pressed 500 copies. And I was just disgusted with it. So I decided I'll just do my thing. I'll do my tours and writing, and that's all I need. So that's what I was trying to do. But I got hungry to be back in the studio, to be creative and put something down, you know, for the fans to hear. And about that time that I got to feeling that way, Lou Robin, my manager, came to me and talked to me about a man called Rick Rubin that he had been talking to, that wanted me to sign with his record company. It was American Recordings. I said, I like the name, maybe it'd be okay. So I said, I'd like to meet the guy. I'd like for him to tell me what he can do with me that they're not doing now. So he came to my concert in Orange County, California. I believe this was like 83 when he first came. And listened to the show, and then afterwards I went in the dressing room and sat and talked to him. And, you know, he had his hair, I don't think it's ever been cut. And very, dresses like a hobo, usually, clean, but which kind of guy I really felt comfortable with, actually. I think I was more comfortable with him than I would have been with a producer with a suit on. But I said, what are you going to do with me that nobody else has been able to do to sell records with me? And he said, well, I don't know that we will sell records. He said, I would like you to go with me and sit in my living room with a guitar and two microphones and just sing to your heart's content everything you ever wanted to record. I said, that sounds good to me. So I did that, and day after day, 3 weeks, I sang for him. And when I finally stopped, he had been saying, like the last day or so, he'd been saying, now, I think we should put this one in the album. So without him saying, I want to record you and release an album, he started saying, let's put this one in the album. So the album, this big question, you know, began to take form, take shape. And Rick and I would weed out the songs. There were songs that didn't feel good to us that we would say, let's don't consider that one. And then we'd focus on the ones that we did like, that felt right and sounded right. And if I didn't like the performance on that song, I would keep trying it and do take after take until it felt comfortable with me and felt that it was coming out of me and my guitar and my voice as one, that it was right from my soul. That's how I felt about it. All those things in that first album, and I got really excited about it. But then we went into the studio and tried to record some with different musicians, and it didn't sound good. It didn't work. So we put together the album with just a guitar and myself.
Johnny Cash, recorded in 1997. Before we get back to our interview with Rick Rubin, let's listen to one of the spirituals from the new Johnny Cash box set, Unearthed. This box features many previously unreleased takes from the sessions Cash and Rubin did together.
Once my soul was astray from the heavenly way, I was wretched and as vile as could be. But my Savior and love gave me peace from above when he reached down his hand for me. When my Savior reached down for me, when he reached down his hand for me, I was lost and undone without God or his Son when he reached down his hand for me.
One of the CDs in this new box set is just spirituals, spirituals and hymns, solo. It's just Johnny Cash and his guitar. And I just particularly love this CD. They're so beautiful, and there's so much feeling on this. And I don't know if you'd listened to a lot of these kinds of songs before, so I'm interested in what the process was like for you of just hearing Johnny Cash sing spiritual after spiritual.
I thought it was beautiful, and it was interesting how it came about. Johnny had found, the title of that album is called My Mother's Hymn Book, and Johnny had found his mother's hymn book, the actual one that she sang him songs from the time he was born. And these are songs that he'd been singing since he was 4 years old, and they really helped form who he was as a person and as a singer. So he felt more connected to these songs, I think, than any songs he ever recorded before. And very second nature for him to play them. And he was really excited about the idea, and would just go through the hymn book and just pick the ones that really touched him and that he remembered and had the best feelings for. And in the book that comes with the box set, he talks about each of the songs and what his connection to them were and why he chose them.
While you were recording these songs, did it give you insights into Johnny Cash's relationship with religion and spirituality?
He's probably the most committed spiritual person I've ever met. He really lived his life according to his connection with God, really. And he felt like his singing was really... He could take a song and make it a devotional song even when it wasn't originally written that way. And an example of that, and I can't remember if it's on the box set or not. Let me take a look. It's not. But a song that was on the last studio album was the Roberta Flack song.
Oh, the first time I ever saw your face?
The first time I saw your face. Actually, she didn't write it, but she made it famous. And when we did that song with Johnny, the goal of it was to perform it as if he was singing the song to God, and to take this love song and make it into a spiritual song. And he loved that. And it was, again, it came really natural to him. It seemed like his devotion for life came from his devotion for God.
Had you been exposed to that kind of devotion before?
Probably not. And he had such an honest and pure way about it that I remember we had a dinner party at my house one night with Johnny and June and some musicians and some film directors. And before dinner, Johnny had everyone hold hands and he said a prayer and he read from the Bible. And I know some of the people at the table had never experienced that before, and some of the people at the table were even atheists. But his belief in what he believed was so strong that what you believed didn't matter so much because you were in the presence of someone who really believed, and that felt good, and that made you believe really in him more than anything else. It was really beautiful.
It's hard to choose one song from the CD, but why don't we hear I Shall Not Be Moved? I think a lot of people know this as a spiritual that was also used as a civil rights song. It was one of the anthems of the civil rights movement. I'm not sure I ever heard it sung this way before. What about you?
I don't think I have either.
And what did the song mean to him? Did he talk about it at all?
he asked my opinion and was not concerned, but didn't want to create confusion and wanted to make sure that people understood that when he sang the song, he was singing it as a devotional song. And when we talked about it, we kind of came to the conclusion that regardless of how people took it, either way, the message was a good one and he was fine with it.
My guest is Rick Rubin. He was Johnny Cash's record producer from 1993 until Cash's death last year. The new 5-CD box set Unearthed collects many previously unreleased tracks from their sessions together. When did Johnny Cash start getting sick within the period of time you were working with him? I mean, how deep were you into the recordings when it was clear that something was going wrong?
During the recording of his second album, which was called Unchained, was when he started, when it became apparent that he was not well.
How did it, like, what were the first things that made that clear?
We'd be in the studio working and he would get dizzy or he would be unable to sing and have to lay down for a while. And some days he wasn't able to sing and he would just not be himself, not be himself at all.
And then he went to the doctor to find out what was wrong?
Yes, and he was misdiagnosed at that time for having a disease called Scheidreger syndrome, which was really a death sentence because if you have Scheidreger syndrome, the life expectancy is 18 months. And then he was medicated for Scheidreger syndrome, and then after 2 years, when he hadn't passed away yet, they decided, well, I guess it's not Scheidreger syndrome because he would have been dead.
So when the doctors figured out, by process of deduction, that it wasn't Scheidreger syndrome, was Johnny Cash very relieved?
I think so. I think he was. I think he was confused, and I think he felt much better, mainly because they took him off of the drugs for Scheidreger, which were killing him.
What were some of the most difficult parts for him of being sick and vulnerable, somebody who'd been so strong and seemingly stoic, just judging from the records, you know?
Yeah, he was. I think stopping touring was a really big blow to him because he'd been on tour for the last 40 years doing, you know, 200 shows a year. And I think he felt like he in some way lost his purpose because he was an artist and the thing that drove him was connecting with people and entertaining people and inspiring people. And he felt like one of the main venues for doing that was taken away from him. And I think that was a very, very difficult transition. And probably the reason that he chose to record so much was because that was the part of his career that he could continue on and continue being an artist and continue being creative and continue communicating. And that's one of the reasons that we have the box that we have. If he was still touring, I don't know that we would have been able to record so much.
What was your recording schedule like after he got sick?
We would record as often as he wanted to record. We set up a kind of a home studio at his home, and we had the studio at my house, and we would work in both of them all the time. And as often as he would want us to get together, or sometimes he would record stuff on his own and send me tapes and then I would work on them. Sometimes I'd work on tracks and send them to him and he'd sing them. And we had just kind of an ongoing, we were always working.
Did you live close together?
No, he lived in Nashville and I live in Los Angeles.
Oh, so one of you was always flying back and forth?
Yes. Well, although we did some, as I said, I would record some tracks at my house and send them to him. He would sing them and send mm-hmm. them back, or mm-hmm. He would cut an acoustic track and send it to me, and then we would add whatever was going to be added to it here. And sometimes we worked long distance as well.
Now, you explained that he was misdiagnosed as having Scheidreger syndrome. What he actually had was autonomic neuropathy. Would you describe what that is?
I think that, I don't know that that is anything. I think that's a little bit of a medical catchphrase when they don't really know what it is. That means you're getting old and things are changing. Will say one of his qualities was that he would never really talk about if he was in pain or if he wasn't doing well. So we never really knew, other than when it got so bad that he would say, I can't sing anymore now, I have to lay down for a little while, or, you know, I think that's all I can do for today. He wasn't someone who complained or really shared what was going on physically with him. And even before all of this, he was really in pain from the first day that I met him. He had been, he had a jaw problem that gave him excruciating pain 24 hours a day, probably for the last 20 years. So he was used to living in pain and being in pain, and he didn't really complain about it. The only time he would even discuss it was when it was so overwhelming that it got in the way of what he was trying to do.
Is that why when you see him toward the end, his mouth is a little twisted to one side?
Yeah, he had a surgery to deal with the pain that he had in his jaw, and they cut some of the nerves in his jaw and drilled through his jaw, and he lost some of the feeling in his face, and it was a failed surgery, and he still had as much pain in addition to now losing some movement in his face.
Was he self-conscious about how his voice changed toward the end when he was sicker and weaker? And you can really hear it in his voice.
He was. He was concerned, and some days he would really question it, and then other days he would sing really well and he'd hear it and think that he was proud of it, and other days he would hear himself and feel like this isn't good enough, and he would beat himself up about it. But we would sing things over and over until he was satisfied, until he loved them.
I thought I'd play another track that's on the new box set, Unearthed, and this is one of the previously unreleased tracks. And you can hear that age and sickness in his voice. His voice is very weak. It's still a beautiful recording. And this is a Stephen Foster song called Hard Times. Can you talk about why he chose to record this song?
I think he liked the idea of spanning time musically, and the fact that we were doing new songs like Hurt and an old song like a Stephen Foster song from the late 1800s. He liked the idea of kind of the history of music and participating in it from all different aspects and from all different periods.
This is Hard Times, sung by Johnny Cash and included on the new CD, Unearthed.
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears while we all sup sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more. It's a song, a sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. While we seek mirth and beauty and music light and gay, there are frail forms fainting at the door. Though their voices now are silent, their pleading looks still say, oh, hard times come again no more. It's a song, a sigh of the weary.
That's Johnny Cash from the new box set, Unearthed. It features many previously unreleased recordings from the 10-year collaboration between Cash and producer Rick Rubin. My guest is Rick Rubin. He was Johnny Cash's record producer from 1993 until Cash's death last year. The new 5-CD box set, Unearthed, collects many previously unreleased tracks from their sessions together. We've been talking about Johnny Cash's illness. How did he take it when his wife, June Carter Cash, died just a few months before he did? I mean, a lot of people just assume that it was hard for him to hang on after that.
I think that's true, and it really affected him deeply. I spoke to him the day she passed. He was in the hospital, and he said that he had suffered so much pain in his life, but nothing really prepared him for this, and nothing felt as bad as this. He was really suffering, and on that call, he told me he wanted to work every day, starting as soon as he could, because he didn't feel like he could go on living if he didn't have something to focus on, because if he sat around and thought about June, he would die.
Feeling that way, do you think that affected the choices of the songs that he wanted to sing, the kind of lyrics that were making sense to him then?
Some yes and some no. Those songs that have been recorded since then haven't been heard yet, and there'll be another studio album, which will be made from the recordings. Since the last album, since the fourth studio album, we've recorded about 60 songs, and the best of those will be the next studio album.
Oh, I'm really glad to hear that there's another one.
Yeah.
That's great. Did you go to Johnny Cash's funeral?
I did.
Was there music at the funeral?
There was. There were several people performed, and the song Singer of Songs, which is on the box, was played at the funeral with sort of a slideshow of some images of Johnny.
Oh. It must be extraordinary for you to know that you produced this extraordinary body of work from an older musician at a time when, you know, you're supposed to be like over the hill. The best work is supposed to be behind you. And this is work that not only changed Johnny Cash's image and you know, got him, you know, Grammy Awards and everything, but it's just such valuable music to have. I mean, I'm so glad we have it.
I agree. And I feel like it's really an issue with our society that we really discard good things before their time just because they get old or look a little ragged. And I don't think age in any way took away from Johnny's greatness. And in many ways, as he got older, and even as his voice may have gotten weaker, it somehow was able to convey emotion in an even deeper way. And, you know, we can't discount the wisdom. He had so much wisdom from both the wild life he led. He really led the life of, he led 10 lives during the course of his lifetime, and was so interested in so many things, and was really a researcher, and studied and read all the time, and was so smart, and he had so much to offer. And the idea that someone like him could be put out to pasture is, it's really a shame.
Go ahead.
I was saying, just a terrible mistake.
Rick Rubin, thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Rick Rubin was Johnny Cash's record producer during the last 10 years of Cash's life. The new 5-CD box set, Unearthed, features many previously unreleased tracks from their collaboration. The fifth CD is a best-of collection drawn from the four albums Cash and Rubin made together.